we'll get into business and talk a little bit about planting progress. We're actually starting to see some. I know Ohio jumped up to 60%, almost 60% this after this last week of some decent weather to get into the ground. But it looks like we are anticipating a little bit more progress there than what we've actually seen. And back here in Illinois, we're actually finalizing everything on our corn planting.
Yeah, you know, corn planting's basically wrapping up. If you looked at that crop report from the weekend, they're basically saying everything's in the ground now. And Megan, isn't it amazing? And I know I had this conversation with Keith a couple weeks ago, but isn't it amazing how much of a turnaround? It's just about 3.5 weeks ago, I think, you and I had a conversation where we said, "Wow, you know, the numbers are looking too close to what we saw in 09 when we had such a hard time getting that crop in the ground." And to see how we turn things around on planting progress is just great. And with the heat that we're looking at now, I can't really give you an estimate on growing degree days, but undoubtedly we're also catching up on growing degree days, which is another important factor. You'll remember part of the bad scenario in 09 was delayed planting in a very cold summer. And that wound up creating a crop that really wasn't ready to go in a lot of places, sometimes even until November, December, that we were able to get that crop out. We had people still working ahead of Christmas in some places trying to get a crop out. So we can at least say that that kind of a bad story is being set aside somewhat now, because we have a turnaround on heat here, and we also really saw the opportunity to make some great progress on corn. Incidentally, right now I think the good to excellent rating on corn in the state is 66% right now. Last year we were about 73%, so we're a little shy of what the good to excellent rating was for last year. You'll remember last year, too, that good to excellent rating went a little bit high and then dropped quite a bit. So I'm not sure it's such a bad thing that we're behind the good to excellent rating that we saw in 10, because in some ways that was a false rating after a while. We are ahead of the good to excellent rating for what we saw on corn in 09 and in 08. In 08 was about 45%, and in 09 it was about 57% rated good to excellent. So we at least have a crop that looks better than two of the last three years.
Let's talk a little bit about what is left to be put in the ground. The prevent plant date was Sunday. We were talking a lot about this when it reflects back into our commodity market numbers. But when we talk about this as to going in to get that final, some of the first plant into the ground this week, where do you weigh out your options? What are some of the things we're looking at and some of those things as well to decide whether we're going to try and get it in this week and go for it or take that prevent plant?
Wow. That's a good question, Megan. I guess, as always, you look at yield potential and then calculate some of the other risk that you're carrying right now. And that sounds kind of like a general, I know, kind of amorphous statement. But boy, I really think that's what it comes down to. You know, what do you think your yield potential really is? Get out some of those yield potential calculators that we have. You can flip open an agronomy handbook and get an estimate of yield potential as well. Get yourself an idea of what the envelope actually looks like. Look at some of your past history in that field. Does that field tend to do pretty well? Does it not? You know, are you going to really sit pretty well yield-wise? Are you not? And then with that, think about some of the other risk that you're carrying. And if you're carrying a lot of risk, and this looks like a little bit of a risky investment, you know, maybe it's time to look at that other option.
You know, Matt, you brought up the growing degree.
Yeah.
Days, the GDUs. I actually have an app on my iPhone.
Yeah.
That will tell us it. And I love these things. So in April, we had 184.
Okay.
In previous years. So in 2010, we had 326. Now in May, we had 424. And the previous year, it was 414. And we already have 115 thus far in June. So it looks like we're on pace to pick up and maybe take advantage of where we were or take more so than where we were a year ago.
I think that's a good point. Like I said, you know, I think the story is that the page is turned, the narrative has changed just a little bit. We probably are not looking at a year that's going to be a repeat now of what we have seen in some past years. you know, we really did have a lot of concern that that 09 story would really create a problem for us, and that we would see people maybe setting up in a situation similar to that kind of nightmare scenario that we wandered through in 09. I really do think that's changed. Now, there will be other stressors and other problems that arise that that plague this crop, just like there is any year. But at least that part of the story, I think, has changed enough that I feel a lot less apprehensive of some of the repeats of what we saw before. And I know we haven't talked about beans, Megan, but beans, you know, it talked about in the 80 range or something like that for percent planted. You know, that's pretty close to where we were last year, 82%. And it's definitely ahead of where we were in 09 and 08, which were around the 60 range. So trucking right along on beans, too, as we try to squeeze them between rainfall events. And also, Megan, you know, boy, it's nice to get a little bit of rain every once in a while and then get some heat to go with it. I think this corn crop is just going to explode size-wise. I think everybody's already talking about that.
With us is Matt Montgomery with the University of Illinois Extension in Mason County. Matt, you bring up a good point about the growth of the corn. Now, with the fact that we've had a couple of really, really hot days and some sunshine and not a lot of moisture the last week or so, because it's been pretty sporadic throughout the areas.
Yeah.
But is that good for the corn crop to maybe get that taproot to go down and look for moisture and get established to give us a good root base?
You know, I think that's a good point too, Megan. And you'll remember some problems we've seen in the last couple years were, you know, a crop, for instance, in one scenario that rooted fairly shallow because we had lots of rain early on and really didn't get pushed to go very deep. And I do think that's a good little bit of news if you want to find a positive in some of those sporadic showers that you were talking about earlier. It does at least force that crop to root down a little bit, and sometimes we haven't seen that in the past. And that actually can help that crop get through a rougher mid-season a little bit better than maybe what it could otherwise if we had a lot of abundance and rainfall early on that let it shallow root and then really didn't push that plant to go down very deep. I think we can see that at least provide a little bit of buffer to some of the dry, hot conditions that could come here in the next few weeks. You know, who knows what's going to happen, but it's nice to have a crop rooted down deep, and I think that that at least helps that crop maybe ward off some stress.
Matt, you and I can always find something to talk about.
Yeah.
To fill some time. So let's talk, before we run out of time this afternoon, a little bit about diseases. I know yeah. Black cutworms have been a concern. Anthracnose has been discussed.
Right.
Are there a lot of things? Is this really going to be one of those years possibly for fungicide application, and that will pay off in the end?
You'll remember, Megan, you know, my story on this always is I think it's going to depend on the environment. You know, we have a mix of hybrids, some that do a good job warding off leaf diseases, some that don't. And the other factor that comes into there then is environment. If we have a lot of rainfall, very humid conditions, then we start to set the stage for diseases to have a good time. If that happens, yeah, I think on those susceptible hybrids in an environment that's maybe a little bit more toward a no-till, minimum-till situation, there might be some benefits there to a fungicide application. But remember, as always, you know, there's several different factors that we want to all play together to make that fungicide decision. Is it a susceptible hybrid? If it's not, if we have a hybrid that's going to ward off some of those diseases, then maybe we aren't as worried about it. Is it an environment that really provides a better opportunity for spores to get going? So minimum till, no-till, you have a lot of residue, a place for that inoculum to get going. And then the other thing is, are we going to have those humid conditions? If we have those humid conditions, you have all three of those together. Those are really the places where those fungicide applications are more assured to pay off. And, of course, the other one that I should mention in there, there's actually four, is evidence of disease. You want to find some evidence of disease starting to work on the plant, the disease actually present starting to work on the plant, to try and ward that problem off. If you get those four together, I think your chances for a return on investment are better. And, you know, Megan, just like anything, that's really the name of the game anymore, is return on investment. We want to see a return on that investment in that product. And that's to our benefit, just for dollars in our pocket. But then it's also to our benefit because we know we haven't applied something prophylactically. we haven't increased the chances for resistance development. And maybe this is maybe my last time to mention this on the air. You'll remember, again, I like to talk about lots of tools in a big toolbox. And, again, I think maybe my last time to mention that on the air with you, and I do want to stress that again, that with everything we do, whether it's fertilizer, whether it's the use of pesticides, we have a bunch of tools we want to have in a great big toolbox. We don't want to lose those tools to resistance or to regulation. And so it's to our benefit to be the best stewards of those products possible.
And obviously, make sure you have your eyes on the field and not scouting 60 miles an hour down the road.
That's exactly right. That is critical. Megan, we did a little survey here in the spring of producers, and it's really interesting to me how many folks, and I'm not picking on producers, I think we're all guilty of this, how many people will say that they practice IPM and then you'll find out they don't go out and scout their field. Scouting is critical. You've got to go out and see what's in that field to really be able to make an informed decision. Information is key. You know, we start making decisions without information to back us up, and that's when we start losing dollars or we start losing political support. We start having problems. So very critical, I think, that you get out and you take a look around and you see if you really need something.